Bearcat Podcast. Jabari Davis, Jameson Wilson, Jordan Vesarini back here with you, and definitely glad to be back after a few weeks since the last recording. We had Team USA triumph and take the gold in basketball, both on the women's and men's side. The women ran, they pretty much ran right through the competition. But the men, they had a few close calls along the way. While I never had any true doubts about them ultimately succeeding, there were, some issues, I guess I'll say, with the mix of talent and how the team was constructed that, in my opinion, led to some of their struggles. I'll open it up to each of you to give your thoughts on Team USA coming through with the gold.
At the end of the day, they took care of business. They got the gold medal. When we talk about this team 20 years from now, no one's going to talk about the games they struggled with or, what was going on in Brazil and all this and that. All they're going to talk about, all right, they took care of business. They were gold medals. That's all they're going to talk about. That's all that matters. They only go in detail when you lose. When you lose, when you, get certain bronze or silver or don't play ball, that's when people go into detail and all the stories start coming out. But when you get the gold medal, of course, things are all right at the end of the day. But with what you're going to hear from going forward is that you're going to have more and more pressure on the top guys to play for their country going forward because, yes, there were a couple close calls. A couple of countries that are coming. Australia is coming. Like, they got some guys. They are a solid team now. They got some guys coming in the future. They're going to be very good. You also have Canada, who's going to be very strong as well in the future. So you're going to have to do some things a bit differently going forward. You're going to have your best guys available if possible. And that's something that you're going to hear about for the next 2 to 3 years because I believe the World Championship game is in 3 years, actually. It's only a year apart from the Olympics. So you're going to hear a lot of talk like that going forward. So it's going to be very interesting to see how that comes about. But at the end of the day, what you're going to see is, you're going to hear pretty much, have more pressure on the top guys to play. But at the end of the day, they got the job done. They took care of it. The mix wasn't ideal. I think there was some coaching issues at some time. But at the end of the day, they got it done. That's all that matters.
Yeah, absolutely. And Jordan, to Jameson's point about the rest of the world, projecting forward a bit with Team USA, we've already seen LeBron James hint about playing in the Tokyo Games in 2020. So you would imagine some of the other stars that either didn't elect to attend this year or weren't quite ready to go, you figure they'll be there as well. So I'm asking you, with older guys like LeBron and Steph and obviously younger guys like Karl-Anthony Towns, Anthony Davis, and even Kawhi Leonard back in the mix, do you worry about the rest of the world catching up enough by that point to truly give Team USA a run for its money, or do you think we'll be every bit as dominant when the majority of the top players are there?
Well, the rest of the world is going to continue to catch up because basketball is evolving, and that's just something that we have to be prepared for and something that we have to keep in mind. Jameson just mentioned a couple of countries that will be up and coming from 4 years from now. The problem with it here in this country is you just don't know which athletes are going to say yay and which ones are going to say nay. I mean, this year we could have put a team on the court that I believe would blow away the competition, and I think that'll be the case again in 4 years. While I do believe other countries are continuing to catch up and that gap is going to get smaller and smaller, I would love to see LeBron James play in 2020. I don't know what LeBron what his game looks like 4 years from now, but look, just LeBron James from a global branding standpoint, playing in 2020, I think is good for all people involved. I think by the time we get to 2020, we'll view LeBron, and maybe in a similar sense to the way we have viewed Kobe this past year. And look, it would have been great to see Kobe go out wearing Team USA. A lot of athletes, a lot of players, DeAndre Jordan talking about how a gold medal trumps an NBA championship. So a lot of it just really depends on how guys view the Olympics in 2020. What's the situation that's happening nationally? Do you have another situation that's, like Zika this year in Brazil? Do you have something like that that's happening that prevents players or keeps players, makes them hesitant to go outside of this country and play basketball? The bottom line is 4 years from now, once again, we're going to have the best basketball players in the world in this country. It's hard to predict from now because you just don't know who's going to play and who's not going to play. But to answer your question, yes, the rest of the world is going to continue to catch up. I think you look at Australia, I think they're going to be very good here in the next few years. I think Canada is another team. Jameson mentioned them. There's several countries that will push this team. Look, I didn't expect Serbia to push Team USA the way they did. To be honest with you, I didn't really necessarily expect anybody to push them the way they did, you know, within a three-point game, a two-possession game, or trailing in the third quarter. To me, this was a team that was put together defensively. They were supposed to be defensive specialists, and they struggled with that. And a lot of it has to do with the difference in the rules, and a lot of it has to do with knocking off China by 60 points and getting complacent.
Mm-hmm.
So to answer your question, yeah, the rest of the world is going to keep catching up. I just want to see who plays for Team USA in 2020, and then we can start making our assessments and our predictions at that point.
And speaking of who's going to play, it should be mentioned that Karl-Anthony Towns is actually Dominican, but it'll be interesting to see whether he, you know, he goes through the naturalization process and ends up playing for his native, the Dominican Republic, or Team USA, kind of similar to how Hakeem Olajuwon and some other, if I'm not mistaken, naturalized players have done, in the past. All right, last thing here on the Olympics, but much was made of Melo's emotional reaction to winning his third gold medal, and partly about how both he and DeAndre Jordan said those medals mean more to them than an NBA ring would. While I absolutely love Melo showing pride in country and think he should be celebrated for it rather than ridiculed or even made fun of, and I respect where each of them are coming from in terms of the significance of the medals, I will say that simply because something is more scarce or rare, that doesn't necessarily mean it is better, than something that happens every year. Essentially, I respect, I absolutely respect and truly appreciate the patriotism shown in comments or stances like that. But when you really take a look at the Olympic competition compared to what the players face in the NBA on a nightly basis, it doesn't actually compare. The NBA compiles the greatest players, from around the world as it is an international game in itself, just with different rules. Do either of you disagree with that stance, or should we move on and start breaking down the state of a few of the teams as we head into camp in the next 6 weeks or so?
Well, basketball, like everything else, is an ever-evolving game. So there's always things you can take from different, international basketball and whatnot. But the one thing I would say is that, the one rule I think that should obviously be changed is when the ball's on the cylinder, you should be able to wipe it off the cylinder. I think that should be changed. I think that would be good for the game. I think that'd be cool if everyone's on the same page with that. But also, the international game is a bit different than the NBA game, and a lot of people came to find that out over the Olympics. The guys like Draymond Green who make their impact in so many different ways in the NBA, it was way different. It was a totally different story in the Olympics. Just wasn't able to do the same things. And the reason why Carmelo Anthony plays so well in these situations is in most cases, he has a huge mismatch. He's playing the four spot. So he's playing, he has a huge, huge advantage over guys that are either too slow or too small to guard him. So they're able to shoot over them or go right by him. So he has a huge advantage, and he's still a very good player. So, yes, you have a very, very good player, probably a top 20 guy in the league. It's not a top 15 guy in the league being played like, he's just a regular guy. Yeah, he's going to kill it. That's how it goes. But with that being said, I think you're still going to see more international-type preferences and styles implemented in the NBA game as long as the personnel sees fit. I think you're going to see more and more of the international flavor into the league. But at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. If you don't have the pieces, it doesn't matter what kind of style you implement. If you don't have the pieces to win, like Jerry Fangelo mentioned, everyone has to catch up. Not everyone has to catch up. I think it's impossible to catch up. It's really unfair. You can't just trade a Kevin Durant. It doesn't work that way. At the end of the day, you got to have the pieces. And if you don't have the pieces, it's just not going to work for you.
Comparing the two, it's very difficult and very tricky. Look, there's this idea that every 4 years when the Olympics come around, true sports fans have to rally around their country. And don't get me wrong, while I was totally engulfed in the storyline of Michael Phelps, I thought that was the storyline of the Olympics. I shared an equal interest in Usain Bolt watching the greatest runner that has ever lived, and he's from Jamaica. So when you look at it from the perspective of, okay, the Olympics are every 4 years, yes, I get that. It comes around once every 4 years. It's a lot less, you're a lot less, the window to win an Olympic medal, I guess, is shorter than what it would be to win an NBA title, considering that you can only win a gold medal once every 4 years. Yet at the same time, if DeAndre Jordan and Carmelo Anthony had actually won an NBA championship, I would like to know what their opinion would be at that particular time. Because we go back years ago, Kobe, a guy who had won multiple championships, had said that you play to win an Olympic medal. Kobe said that too. And I think while we were making fun of DeAndre Jordan and Carmelo Anthony, we forget that Kobe made that statement. It was like 8 years ago Kobe made that.
In 08.
It might have been 08. Yeah, 08 is when he made that. Yeah. So, you know, it's a moment thing. I mean, what do we want DeAndre? Here's the realistic approach to it. What do you want DeAndre Jordan to say when Team USA is going into the medal round? And you stick a microphone in his face and say, would you rather win an NBA championship or a gold medal? If he says an NBA championship, then we're criticizing him and saying, well, this is why the rest of the world is catching up with this, because these guys don't care. They would rather win an NBA championship. Now, look, if DeAndre Jordan's in the NBA Finals and you stick a microphone in his face before game one and say, look, would you rather win a title or a gold medal? He's going to say he'd rather win an NBA championship. So look at it with reality here, okay? And I can make a cross-reference to another sport, now, baseball here for a second. Ichiro became the all-time hit king, and we have the debate, should his hits count from Japan? And a lot of people say no, because he wasn't going up against the best competition. His hits towards the hit king going towards Pete Rose should only count when he was in Major League Baseball. Pete Rose made a big stink about that. A lot of people agree with Pete Rose because Ichiro was going up against the best talent in the world when he came here and played in the Major League. With that being said, every year we have the best basketball players in the world in the NBA. They are the best basketball players in the world. And I can truthfully, and I know everybody out there can agree with this, the best basketball players in the world, 1 through 12, are not playing in the Olympics. It's not possible.
Yeah.
The best basketball players in the world, 1 through 12, when you look at 30 teams, are playing in the NBA. So in my mind, I'm going to say an NBA championship outweighs a gold medal. Maybe I sway a little bit on that because, look, we've dominated the Olympics. We've dominated. Mm-hmm. And maybe if another country stepped up and knocked us off, in 2020, if we get knocked off, maybe that perspective changes a little bit. But based on what it is right now, the best players in the world play in the NBA every single season. But don't be too hard on DeAndre Jordan or Carmelo Anthony. Those are two guys that we're living in the moment. I thought Carmelo Anthony, he was the leader of this team. Carmelo Anthony was the veteran leader of this team. So take it easy on those guys. And again, think about the timing of the question as well. That's always important with the media. These guys have cameras or a phone in their face every single day. So look at it from that perspective as well.
Totally agree. Each of you hit it right on the head. To a certain degree, I have absolutely no problem with the statement. Even though I disagree with it, I don't have a problem with it, specifically because of the timing of it. You're exactly right. What do you expect these guys to say? And if they said anything otherwise, anything to the contrary in that moment, then we and everybody else would be killing them for that, they're saying they don't take it seriously enough. So fully agree. All right, I'm actually going to reverse order here a bit and stick with you here, Jordan, as we transition to breaking down some of the teams and away from Olympic basketball. Coming to you about the team that's in your market, and for listeners out there, Jordan covers the league in general, but in particular the Utah Jazz because he lives near the market. So the Jazz have been on the rise, but they also managed to go ahead and bring in some good veteran talent in George Hill, Joe Johnson, Boris Diaw. Not only for veteran presence, but those guys are actually still individuals that can compete and actually produce out there on the court. They're expecting Dante Exum back. Expecting him to be ready to go. I personally think that Rodney Hood is about ready to break out. I know that he was already impressive over his first couple years in the league, but I think he's ready to take even another step to his game. So, Jordan, talk to me about their offseason and where they might now rank amongst what continues to be a highly competitive conference.
Yeah, look, I'm typically the downer on my daily sports show here. I typically irritate a lot of Jazz fans because I'm always hesitant to give them the credit that they deserve. Although the one thing that has been the bright spot for Utah the past 4 or 5 years has been Dennis Lindsay. And I think he's a very bright general manager. I think he has this team moving in the right direction. I praise the hiring of Quinn Snyder. I've praised several moves that the Jazz have made setting up to where they're at right now. With that being said, I do believe this is a 50-win team if they stay healthy. I still think that down low, there maybe you got a couple of question marks with Derek Favors and Rudy Gobert. And I think those two complement each other beautifully defensively. Offensively, there's still a little bit to be desired. But look, this is a good team this past season. And if the Jazz are not if they are not bit by the injury bug, they make the postseason. Now, you could say that, I know, in the past for multiple teams, but Rodney Hood, to me, is going to be the best player on this team within the next 2 years. And that's a good thing. You know, Jazz fans would point to the fact that, okay, well, we signed Gordon Hayward to a max deal, and now he's not even going to be our best player. That's okay, because, look, Gordon Hayward would be better suited to be your second or third best player. In fact, if he's your third best player, I think you've got a very, very good basketball team. They were lacking in the veteran department. They went out. They got a couple of vets. I'm really curious to see what Joe Johnson could do coming off the bench this season. I'm really excited for this Jazz team. And you know what? The entire state of Utah really is as well. This has been one of the more fun off seasons that I can remember in quite some time. A guy that is really, really piquing a lot of interest is Trey Lyles. And I think that he actually may be key for Utah moving forward. Maybe that's your solution to the monotony down low defensively, you know, where you have Favors and Gobert who offer a ton defensively, but what are you getting on the offensive side of the ball? Trey Lyles seems right now he has a much higher ceiling than Derek Favors. Dante Exum, how is he going to come back? I mean, we know that Dante is an athlete, struggles a little bit with his shot. Defensively, he's got that length, he's got that speed. I think the pieces are fitting together in Utah. If they stay healthy, I think they can win 50 games this season. So I think this has been one of the best off seasons that the Jazz have had in quite some time. I think the whole idea of, quote unquote, trust the process, which Jazz fans have heard for the last 3 years, and they don't like to hear that. No fan likes to hear that. You know, when you go to media day and you talk to a coach and the coach says, we just want to compete, that means your team stinks. I mean, that's coach's phrase for saying, we stink, we want to go out and we want to be competitive. And the Jazz have heard that for the last 3 to 4 years. We heard that under Ty Corbin. We heard that under Quinn Snyder. Now that Quinn has a couple of years under his belt and you're starting to see some development of the young guys that Utah has invested in, and don't forget, as far as the cap numbers go, Utah looks really good right now. So it's one of the better off seasons that the Jazz have had in a very long time. I think they can compete for for home court advantage in the first round, which means you're a top four team of the Western Conference. A lot of guys have to go into that. You have to stay healthy, but there's no reason why this team can't be around the 48-52 win mark this year.
You know, you kind of stole my thunder. I was gonna wrap with him, because I agree with you. I think GM Dennis Lindsay is actually one of the more underrated GMs in the league. I know we hear a lot about guys like, you know, Presti and Morey and, you know, other of the younger individuals that are out there. But I think, you know, the job that Dennis Lindsay has done over the last couple of years has been phenomenal. So I was going to wrap it with, you know, asking you if fans in the market have also bought into what he's selling in the direction of the team. But it sounds to me like everybody is definitely, looking forward to this upcoming season. And I am as well.
No, I think you hit it right on the head. And obviously, time will tell. Time will tell. I mean, you've heard trust the process for the last 3 years. If this team goes out this year and they stink it up and they barely miss the playoffs once again, then people are going to start questioning Dennis Lindsay. But the fan base, for the most part, has been patient.
Okay, shifting gears to my L.A. market, I'm coming to you, Jameson. This could sound completely ridiculous, but to a certain degree, I absolutely love what they are building. And I'm speaking of the Lakers in particular here. We're going to get to the Clippers at the end. I'm going to open it up to each of you, but in particular with these Lakers, I love what they're building. You know, like, and I kind of love the stage that they're in. You know, realizing how that sounds coming off a 17-win season. I know it might sound crazy, but this really reminds me. And this is something that I mentioned on the Basketball Insiders podcast just yesterday that I did with Jesse Blancarte. You know, this reminds me of the rebuilding period the organization underwent in the mid-90s, you know, when they drafted guys like Nick Van Exel and Eddie Jones and even guys like Eldon Campbell, and they had vet pieces around them, and they sort of allowed them to grow together organically. For those younger listeners out there, it was a squad that directly preceded the Shaq and Kobe teams, and I really look forward to this upcoming season. Talk to me about their offseason. Talk to me about what your expectations are for them heading into the year.
Well, I think the biggest thing is the coaching change and the philosophy change. I think that is bigger than any player change that could have taken place, to be honest with you. The mood around the team the last couple of years, especially last year, was really bad. It was a really toxic situation. There wasn't a direct line between coaches and players. And when you have young players, your coaches and players need to be on the same page. And if that's not the case, you're going to invite a lot of problems onto your ball club. And as the season went on, things kept on getting worse and worse, especially with the young players and their minutes being inconsistent. A lot of things just never really added up. And at the All-Star break, you knew it was bad when, you know, Jordan Clarkson had to tell D'Angelo Russell, don't say nothing crazy before you answer the question. You knew there was something wrong. We all knew it was a problem, but it was probably way worse than what we ever thought it would be. So that's just kind of how that goes. I think the coaching staff and just the a breath of fresh air in the organization from that position is going to help the young guys play better. I think that in itself is worth about five wins by itself. They're going to struggle. They're a young team, and they don't have the talent that some other teams have. They're gonna beat some teams they shouldn't beat and whatnot. There's going to be games where they drop or they shouldn't. That's just how it goes. I do think you'll see a better D'Angelo Russell. I think he'll be more comfortable and calm with the basketball. You know, he needs to learn how to take control of the basketball and take care of the basketball. At the same time, I think that he'll be okay with that, and I think he will progress as a player. Same thing with Jordan Clarkson. He's looked very good in the summer with his workouts and staying in shape, even though after signing a contract, he's in the gym every day. That's a very good thing. I'm interested to see the front court. The front court guys are the biggest question marks. My thing is, at the end of the day, I'm looking for what's Randall and Nance going to do. How are they going to develop going into this upcoming year? That's going to be the biggest thing, because those guys, as talented as they are, the flash that we've seen, if they're not going to progress and grow, doesn't really make any sense. So those guys, if they can up their game, they can take their game to another level. If Julius Randle can find a right hand, and if Larry Nance can stay out of foul trouble and continue to be productive and be able to knock down that 17-18-footer with regularity, then you got something there. You got something. And, of course, Brandon Ingram coming aboard as well. You know, you've got a nice young core there with coaching that's going to be able to help them develop and not kill their confidence on the first week of the season. You know, that's going to be key. The coaching staff will be very encouraging, not discouraging. Now, of course, you have veteran pieces, Luol Deng and Timothy Mozgov. Those guys, all right, let's call it what it is. They're not worth the money they got. But, hey, no one is. I think they got good value for what they brought in. A little bit expensive on the Mozgov deal. That's a lot. It's more than I think anyone anticipated, even though these deals this summer are pretty crazy. At the same time, it's not a bad deal, especially if both guys are healthy. If both guys are healthy, they're both productive players. They're good locker room guys. After the stuff that happened at the end of last season, they need all the good locker room guys they can get. So, good situation all the way around. It's going to be a learning year. It's going to be a slow development year. So, if you're a Lakers fan out there, manage your expectations. You cannot get up or down on this team or too down on this team as the season goes on. I think we're looking at about 25 to 28 wins, but I think you'll see a team that's more competitive. And I think you'll see the growth more and more from the young players than we saw in the last couple of years. So I think you'll see more progress and progress. At the same time, it's still going to be a rough year on the overall.
Yeah, so Luke Walton, he recently talked about kind of managing those expectations. He specifically said it's not going to be about a win total. It's not going to be about that. It's going to be about that particular thing and the progress of those players and just seeing how quickly and how fluidly they can adapt to, you know, a new basketball philosophy and just a new direction in general. One thing that I liked seeing, and this was based on a report, but Luke Walton reportedly turned Jason Terry down. I like it, for one, because they already have a quote-unquote aging vet guard that can't really be expected to contribute on a nightly basis anymore at this stage in his career in Jose Calderon. But it also shows that the team isn't necessarily as prone to succumb to some of the nostalgia and sentimentality I think the organization was guilty of over the last few years. I like the idea of Walton not lining his bench with cats simply because they have a history or even a long-time friendship with him. What were your thoughts on that?
I actually liked that a lot because there was no need to add another guy at that position because you want to play your young guys as much as possible. Now, there is a former Wildcat that has some ties to Luke and some of the coaching staff and Chase Buttinger, who is not a bad player for a guy that's a free agent they can probably get for the minimum. I think he's a solid guy that you should probably add depth at that small four or even small ball four position everyone likes to play these days. If he's, if he wants to come to LA, I think he'd be a decent fit for that bench, good guy to have in the locker room, can shoot it a little bit, halfway decent defender. Like, he's not a bad guy to add on to fill out your roster. He's just not. So I'd like to see them go after a guy like that more than Jason Terry. They need more depth in the front court. The back court's pretty much solid. Plus, you want to play your young guys as much as possible. You want to see the young guys playing 35 minutes a night. They're both young guys, in shape, getting ready to go, healthy. You want to see those guys playing 35, 38 minutes a night and just getting all their mistakes out, putting off the job,
and flying out. You don't want any other older players taking up minutes from them. There's no need for that. But the front court, a lot more questions that area, especially with, even though Brandon Ingram's going to be playing the three a lot this year, he's still a rookie. At the end of the day, he's still a rookie. You're going to need depth. Got to have depth. Chase Buttinger for the minimum wouldn't be that bad.
All right, so last thing I'll ask here on the Lakers before we open it back up to Jordan and have an open discussion. Speaking of some small forward depth, do they keep Nick Young? And the reason why I ask this is I think we were all in agreement at the start of the summer that a reboot for both parties is probably in the best interest. Then all of a sudden, some cryptic tweets. A couple weeks back, Nick Young was saying something like he could forgive and move on and whatever. I remain of the opinion that they do need to go ahead and find a way to part ways with him. Not just from their perspective, but also for his perspective. Like I just think that both parties need a reboot. Do you think they do that? And could that eventually lead to opening up a roster spot for a guy like Chase Buttinger?
I think they do. I believe the deadline is August 31st, which is Wednesday. So I believe they do to stretch someone's contract. That's the deadline, if I'm not mistaken. So if that's the case, we'll find out Wednesday. I do believe they do. It's just honestly, as one, you want to release a player so he can find a spot to go elsewhere. Like you don't want to just keep on lingering along and having a guy just wait and wait and wait and then not play and then try to trade him or whatever. You don't want to do that during the season. It's too big of a distraction. If you're going to do it now while it's summertime, while people are talking about football, to where it's not really a distraction, everybody moves on. I think it's something that they do move on from him because he's not really going to help what they're trying to build. Like, he's not the guy. He's the guy that takes a lot of shots, doesn't play defense, doesn't pass. He doesn't really help what they're trying to build there. So in that case, you're better off letting it go, stretch the contract, keep the money, and keep it moving. And then you can bring a guy who would probably be more this kind of system. A little bit, he probably fits better. He doesn't have to worry about any craziness.
That is fair. That is fair. All right, and we're going to be talking Lakers all season, obviously. We get into the entire league, but obviously with a couple of us living in or around the market, that they're going to be an ongoing a part of the discussion. But opening it back up, and actually I'll come to you, Jordan, with this as we discuss the Clippers here to end the show. But I feel like it's kind of like now or never for them. Not necessarily because their current players won't be any good in another couple of years, because they will. But actually because they've got guys that are, they've got free agency looming ahead. Both Chris Paul and Blake have early termination options next summer, if I'm not mistaken. And J.J. Redick is an unrestricted free agent straight up. Pretty decent job. They brought in, Bryce Johnson. I like him as a piece. He's a young and unproven piece, though. Diamond Stone, same deal with him, if he ends up making the roster. But here, I'll ask you this. And I always struggle with this guy's name, but Luke Mbamute, is he finally going to be the answer for them at the small forward position after it seems like they've been rotating guys in and out of that spot for about the last four or five seasons?
No. No. Absolutely not. No, I mean, I always try to be really – sometimes I've been blasted before on social media for being too hard on the Clippers. But look, let's just be realistic here. There's nobody in the Western Conference not named – San Antonio that has a chance of knocking off Golden State in 2016-2017. I'm just throwing that out there right now. The Golden State Warriors are too good. You can go ahead and get cute with talk this time of the year and start, what if they don't gel? I don't care if they don't gel. Even if they don't gel, there's still more talent in their prime on this team than I have seen since the Heat back in 2010. And look, even though they had their problems, they still went to the NBA championship. So as far as the Clippers go, that window is getting smaller and smaller. I do like what the Clippers did this offseason for some young talent. Diamond Stone, to me, was one of the more interesting players in the NBA draft because I watched this kid play a lot of basketball last year, and I if he can get it right mentally, I think this kid can be a real difference maker in the NBA, at this level. So, but as far as that three position goes, no, they haven't done anything to fix that particular spot, and you could throw out a million excuses as to why they haven't been able to fix that particular spot out there on the court. It may be one of those deals where come February, come trade deadline, you're looking at this team, you're looking at the roster, and you realize the Clippers are the fourth or fifth best team in the Western Conference, and all of a sudden you have to make a move, or maybe it's the offseason where you make a move, and maybe you do move on from Blake Griffin. to set your team up in the next 3 to 4 years. Now, it's getting to the point with the Clippers where there's too many holes, and they've had the idea to fix it. Look, they brought in Jeff Green. They brought in Matt Bourne. They went out and they got Wesley Johnson. They stole Wesley Johnson from the team that was across the locker room because he was the best perimeter defender. The problem was he was the best perimeter defender on a team that won 20 games. So you continue to try to put Band-Aids on this position, and again, you have so much money tied up elsewhere that it's very difficult to fix that spot. But no, he's not the answer at the three. Let's just be real here. No.
Well, I disagree a slight bit on the Clippers' spot in the Western Conference. I don't see anyone in the West actually beating the Warriors. I just don't see it. But I like the Clippers roster more than I like the San Antonio Spurs roster, especially with the age of the guys that San Antonio has to depend on to make things happen. Tony Parker getting up there. D'Angelo Ginobili getting up there. LaMarcus Aldridge and Kawhi Leonard are probably probably the best starting forwards in the league on paper, but at the same time, they need people to create for them. And I just don't know if San Antonio has that on a basis, on an elite basis anymore. I think the Clippers probably have a better overall team, but when I think about it and look at it, you just can't trust them because they failed us so many times. Like, how many times have the Clippers lied to us over the last 4 years? You know, so I get where Jordan's coming from, but at the same time, if I had to pick a rankings or a power rankings or my projection for who's going to finish where, I'd probably have to pick the Clippers second in the West just based off of their roster and their continuity with each other. With that being said, there's a lot of questions on that team. If things don't go well, then you're going to start hearing a lot of whispers of guys who's leaving, who's staying, what's going to happen with the coach and administration. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of things going on with the Clippers. I think the Spurs are the more steady situation, but I think overall the Clippers have the more talented guys. I think you can make an argument that talent-wise, the Clippers have the better overall roster, even though their three spot has been very bad for very long.
I'll take Dre and KD over San Antonio starting forwards, but that's actually a good point in terms of what they have left on that roster. Keep bringing it back to the Clippers and keeping with it, Jordan, is their bench strong enough with the addition of guys like Most Bates and Brandon Bass and Allen Anderson? And while they brought back Jamal Crawford and Austin Rivers, as they figure to be main rotation pieces, do they have a strong enough supporting cast in your eyes?
For what? To win the West?
to compete? to outlast San Antonio?
Okay. Well. Again, I'm going to go back to what I said at the beginning of the show. When I go to media day and I have a coach tell me that all we want to do is compete, that means you stink, and the idea of winning an NBA championship is too far-fetched. This team's not good enough to win the Western Conference. Let's just leave it at that. And when you have Chris Paul and DeAndre Jordan and Blake Griffin, you have guys in their prime, the idea is to at least win your conference and become and get yourself 4 games away from winning the NBA title. And the fact is, no, they're not there yet. They're a top 3, top 4 team in the West, and that's as far as I can go with the Clippers. I mean, I just – the idea – the definition of insanity is attempting the same thing over and over and over and expecting a different outcome. That's the definition of insanity. And once again, going into this season, we have Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan, and makeshift players with Jamal Crawford coming off of the Pines. They didn't improve the three spot. They're a year older, and I don't necessarily believe they're a year better, while other teams, to me, did get better. So, no, I'm trying to be as kind as I can with the Clippers, but best-case scenario, they're a top 3, top 4 team in the Western Conference, and that's it.
All right, I'm going to go ahead and enact the clinical definition of insanity and try to take another approach to this. So, Jameson, it seems to me it comes down to will their core be healthy down the stretch, and into the playoffs. Outside of the just embarrassing collapse they had against the Rockets a couple years ago, they've been a bit snake bitten and worn down toward the end of the year, as a core, oftentimes. In your opinion, can Doc and his staff get enough from his bench throughout the year to help, I guess, ensure a bit of roster health and limit the toll the regular season seems to take on their main guys?
Well, that's a very good thing you bring up because the health has an issue. And, last year Chris Paul was pretty healthy up until the playoffs. I mean, that was probably one of the more healthier years he's had as of late. Same thing with Blake Griffin. So I don't know what's going to happen outside of Blake Griffin, obviously, you know, breaking his hand and whatnot, you know, during that situation. But that being said, it's a situation that, like Jordan mentioned, they are a year older, and they're a lot of guys in contract years, so you don't know what's going to happen. Like, this is probably this is a very unpredictable year. I think, really, you're really talking about a boom for them. It's probably the conference finals. A bust for them is probably another first-round exit. I mean, that has nothing with the problem with this particular roster, especially with guys being a year older. You know, Jamal Crawford, as good as he is, he's a year older and a year, you know, he's going to be worse on defense this year, playing a position where you need to be good on defense because you're guarding, you know, point guards and shooting guards, and in this league, those guys light you up on a nightly basis. So if you have poor wing defenders and your guy that's guarding the two is a subpar defender, and J.J. Redick, as good as he is on the offensive end, not the great on the defensive end, you have some issues that you really just can't correct. And as good as DeAndre Jordan is around the basket, he can't cover up for all four guys or all three guys that have liabilities on the rest of the court. So they do have some issues. Injuries are definitely a part of it. At the end of the day, even if they were healthy, they're still behind Golden State. If they're healthy, I put them as the second best team in the West. But that's not saying much because, honestly, the West has three different tiers. They have Golden State, that middle tier of the Clippers and Spurs, however you want to rank them. And then from 4 to about 15, it's everybody else. Because nothing surprises me from 4 to 15. There's no mixture of anything that would surprise me because there's just so much uncertainty amongst the rest of those teams in the Western Conference.
And that's fair, and that's fair, and that's real. You know, there's a reason why we play the games, but to a certain degree, you can kind of see it laid out there. You know, obviously, you know, injuries and overall, you know, roster health will play a role, but, you know, barring anything crazy, it really does look like it's going to be, you know, Golden State versus the rest, which I have no problem with. You know, I also mentioned this on the podcast, you know, on the Basketball Insider podcast yesterday. I like the, you know, like, I root for King Kong. Like, I love, you know, I love a dynasty. I love, you know, one of those just dominant teams. But I also like root for the airplanes that are shooting King Kong, you know, shooting to King Kong, trying to get him off the building. You know, so, and I anticipate that being the case all throughout this season. All right, we'll end it today with a quick discussion on a Twitter topic of the week, since we haven't done one of those in quite some time. This week's topic, and actually, you know, for those out there, I'm Jabari Davis, NBA. Jameson can be found at the Jameson. Jordan is at Jordan_DTS. So I highly recommend you checking us out on there and interacting on there, you know, giving us feedback as well. But this week's topic was brought to you by at ctownsend120. He's a guy that I follow. He's a radio host based out of Chicago, if I'm not mistaken, and an interesting follow on Twitter, you know, for those that are, once again, that are on there. But he asked a simple question. If you were picking for just this one season, not necessarily moving forward, but just 2016-17, would you rather have Carmelo Anthony or James Harden on your team?
Ooh, that's a good question. Give me Harden. He's younger. He plays in a better system. You know what you're going to get out of him. With Carmelo, the one thing with Harden, you know what you're going to get. You know he's going to play a lot of games. Like, he's not going to get hurt. He's going to put 25 and not more. He's going to get his shots up. He may not play a whole lot of defense. Well, he's not playing a lot of defense. He might be passing. He may not pass the ball a whole lot. But you know he's going to play all 82 games or 78 games at age 82. With Melo, as he's older, even though he plays well after the season after the Olympics, the last two go-rounds, I don't know if he can stay healthy, and I'm not sold on the Knicks, so give me Harden.
All right, Jordan?
Yeah, that's one of those questions where I think if you ask, you know, 100 people, you'd probably get 50 different answers. James Harden gets criticized a lot for his defense, rightfully so, not rightfully so, however you want to look at it. He's horrible defensively. Melo has, you know, he's not much better defensively. So I'm going to go with the guy that's a little bit more explosive at this particular time in their career, and that would have to be James Harden. You asked me this question 2 years ago. I would have went with Carmelo hands down, but just based off of age, I know it was for one season, but based off of age, based off of man, you know what? Now I'm second guessing myself. That's such a good question. I'll stick with Harden. I'm going to stick with Harden. Either which way you go, I think you're going to get very similar characteristics out of the two guys. You're not going to get a lot of defense. You're going to get two guys that definitely want to get their shots up. I'm just going to go with the guy that at this stage in his career is a little bit more explosive. So I'll go ahead and go with James Harden based on that right there.
And I can't fault either of you for going there, and that's probably the direction that one should go. But I'll play the devil's advocate. I'll go with Melo in this situation specifically just because it's one season. They want to make that very clear. One season. In this particular season, I would go with him. Now, if we were moving forward, obviously the 26, 27-year-old James Harden is the guy that you go with. He is more explosive at this stage, and he's going to put up a more productive year, from just a counting numbers, perspective, without a doubt. But there's something, what you talked about in terms of Melo being the leader on that, Team USA this year. Maybe I'm caught in the moment. Maybe I'm being a prisoner of the moment to steal a catchphrase. But I like that. I like when I see guys that show me more than what I necessarily anticipated. It's not that I necessarily saw Melo as a terrible leader in the past, but I haven't seen exactly that. I've yet to see Melo. Outside of his, the 1 year at Syracuse, I've yet to see Melo put a team on his back, or not doing it all on the court, but being that leader, being that that voice in the locker room, but also being able to contribute at a high level. I haven't seen that in some time. So again, it's kind of a weak argument because obviously I think James Harden, even though it's a difficult question, is probably the right answer here. But I wanted to show Melo a little bit more love, and plus I'm for one am hopeful that they can catch lightning in a bottle. They're not going to compete for a title this year, but I'm hoping New York can stay at least relatively healthy, and I'm hoping to see good things out of Melo this year. All right, guys, let me get some final shots out of you because this has been an absolutely fantastic show and really good to be back. Jameson, hit us off.
Man, when it comes to the final shot, the NBA doesn't stop. Basketball really doesn't stop, especially in Olympic year. Here it is, about to be September, and we're still talking NBA, still talking about relevant NBA stuff going on.
Yeah.
But I do want to give props out to Team USA. The guys that they play on this team, they didn't have to. A lot of stuff going on, a lot of issues and whatnot, with the Zika and all this stuff going on in Brazil. These guys sacrificed a lot of their summer to do this. Like, they didn't have to do this. Like, a lot of people talk, it's a right and whatnot. No, like, guys have the right to say no and stay at home and chill.
Mm-hmm.
So these guys, these 12 individuals, even though, Savarez didn't really play, but these guys pretty much sacrificed their summer and, their own free time to play for this country. And that's something that you got to respect. Even though they didn't play to the best, but we all thought they were capable of playing every day, you got to give them credit for at least showing up and doing that because at the end of the day, they didn't have to. It could have been a point where everybody said, nah, we're cool. Go get the under-23 guys. It could have been a situation like that. Not saying it wouldn't have been a difference, but I'm saying it could have been something like that. So I applaud each and every guy on that roster and the coaching staff because I was out here in mid-July when they were out here, and they've been going hard for 6 weeks. And that's a pretty good accomplishment. So salute to those guys, salute to the gold medal. And I think people need to chill on the critique on every little thing that isn't a blowout when it comes to this team. I think people need to chill, relax, and going overboard over every little thing. People are acting like these games versus Australia and Lithuania were game seven. It's like, relax, take a deep breath. At the end of the day, they still have the best five players on the court, minimum, each and every game. So, but, hey, you know how it goes on Twitter and how basketball Twitter gets kind of, gets kind of antsy when these days go on. But, again, salute to those guys, and glad they brought home the gold.
Absolutely. Fantastic points. Again, salute to both the men and women's teams for, going over there and taking care of business. Again, the women, they dominated. The men, they took care of business when it counted and also, blew some folks out as well. I respect the grind, and I respect, the dedication, and respect for their, for the opportunity to play for their country. So I certainly appreciate that and agree. And shout out to Harry B. He kind of fleeced Dallas for that that miracle contract. And I hope I'm wrong on him. Hey, I'm trying to be positive. I hope I'm wrong on him.
Jabari, it wasn't a fleecing. This was broad daylight, no ski mask, just
give me the money.
This is bare face.
How much money I got in your pocket?
Broad daylight. Right.
James,
like,
how much money I got in your pocket?
But that's a different topic for a different day. We'll get into that at a different time. But that's what that was. That wasn't a fleece. That was a straight-up bare face. What you got in your pocket, that's mine now. Let's keep it moving.
Oh, boy. Okay, well, hey, you know what? Honestly, like I said, I hope we're wrong, and I hope he does well there. I don't necessarily have the highest hopes or the highest of belief in that. All right, Jordan, let me get your final shot.
Yeah, I can kind of piggyback off of what Jameson was talking about. We're giving the players, a round of applause and making sure they go out and they keep the United States of America at the top of the basketball world where we definitely belong. On top of that, you got to give a big shout-out to Coach Mike Krzyzewski. One of the things that people don't quite understand, and I don't think a lot of people realize, coaches do not win medals in the Olympics. I don't know if you guys were aware of that, but coaches do not get medals in the Olympics. Isn't that something?
I did not know that. What coaches, do they get? Do they get like a plaque or something? Like,
I have no idea. I know they don't get medals. To my understanding, they don't get medals. So with that being said, when you look at someone who continues to lead this team to the gold medal, it's a pretty cool deal that we have, Mike Krzyzewski, who, if you put together, the Mount Rushmore that people want to talk about in all sports all the time, who's on your Mount Rushmore, he's going to be in there as far as basketball coaches go. Like, he's top four. I think you have John Wooden, and then right after that you have Mike Krzyzewski as far as college basketball coaches for sure. So I think you got to give a shout-out to that. And the fact is, look, the United States of America has the greatest basketball players in the world in this country. Moving forward to 2020, 2024, 2028, as long as the best continue to go represent this country, we're going to win gold medals. Now, as far as Jameson said about everybody needs to chill when it's a three-point game, look, I'm one of those tower shouters at that point in time. And when we're tied with Serbia going into the fourth quarter, it's not okay. When you have 12 guys and 11 of those 12 guys are max contract players on your team, it's not okay. So, it's tough because guys get complacent, but a lot of it has to do with coaching as well, and I think Team USA has the right leadership. We were in a very bad way as far as basketball goes about, 8 years ago. There were a lot of question marks as if our reign had ended, and a lot of the reason why people get so upset is because 92, 96, 2000, we were beating teams by 30 points, 40 points on a regular basis. So the idea of the rest of the world catching up, yes, that's true, but at the same time, I think a lot of people expect the best from the best, and Team USA needs to embrace that moving forward. But give a shout out to the coaching staff as well, because I mean, really, that is a no-win situation when you take a look at Coach Krzyzewski. I mean, if Team USA wins the gold and you're the coach of that team, the old saying, players win, coaches lose. Okay, well, if you have the best group of players in the world and you win, nobody's going to give you props for that. If you have the best group in the world and you lose, you're going to take a lot of criticism, and he's assumed that criticism now for multiple Olympics. So I tip my hat to that guy who's on the Mount Rushmore basketball coaches of all time.
That's actually a really good point, because you can look at Phil Jackson's career as kind of a mirror of that. At a certain point, folks, while now they respect him and they show him love, the fact that, if I'm not mistaken, he only won one Coach of the Year award, over his illustrious career, that tells you, if you have the best players or what people perceive to be the best players, that you're expected to win. And if you don't, it's on you. So, of course, respect to Krzyzewski, his staff, as well as the trainers. The one thing I'll say is, not to take a side on this, but I will say that I kind of agree with the, folks should chill thing. Because, look, when you look at 92, those guys that were playing for those other countries, those weren't like professional basketball players. And no disrespect to anybody that did, they did play. And there were obviously some talented guys, but there was literally no comparison whatsoever. Same thing with 96. I hear the point about complacency and where you definitely don't want to be guilty of that. But I think it has more to do, honestly, the reason why they struggled against certain teams in this particular tournament was more because this team simply didn't have playmakers. They had a lot of individual scorers and guys that go get me a bucket type guys. But in terms of the actual playmakers that they would have otherwise relied upon, a Steph Curry, naturally, a LeBron James, even some of the other guys that weren't on this roster, I think that really is the reason why they struggled more so than the quote unquote rest of the world necessarily catching up that much. But I guess we're going to have to wait until 2020 in order to see. And I'm on a personal level, I'm hoping that LA gets 2024, but that's neither here nor there. For Jameson Welsh and Jordan Buscarini, this has been a fantastic episode of your Triple Threat podcast. Stick with us in the upcoming weeks, because we will have guests and we will break down some of the other teams.